Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayer.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we're joined by other comics fans for some lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting.
The convention we'll be talking about in this episode is Comic-Con International San Diego 2012. It is the largest convention of its type. It had, I think, about 128,000-ish people. That's probably just attendees. You can probably add a few thousand more just for the people actually working the booths, and probably a few thousand more the people actually work in the convention center. As always, it was fun, but it was crazy. On this, of course, is another longtime Comic-Con attendee, Bob. You've been doing this for how long?
22. This is my 22nd year.
Okay, I think I'm somewhere around 30, but without doing a little research, I honestly can't tell you the first year I started going regularly, but I know I was like, 13 or 14 at least, maybe a little younger, but... I had to get dropped off at the Civic Center back then because I wasn't able to drive, so that gives me some clues right there. Now, Lenny, longtime listener of the show and stuff, this was your first time at Comic-Con, right?
That's right, my very first time.
Did you feel the least bit prepared for it?
Somewhat. I mean, I knew it was going to be big, but it was I would say it was actually bigger and better than I thought it was going to be.
Cool. Now, you did not go to preview night, right?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get onto the online buying system until a minute past the start time, and by then, they were all gone.
Yeah, the tickets go insanely fast. Now, Bob, what was your strategy this year for preview night?
For preview night, well, my main thing on preview night was I had checked on the exclusives that I wanted to get and a couple of autographs that I wanted to get. So for instance, I picked up my Hero Initiative con exclusive version of the Overstreet price guide that I get from them every year. There were some comics that some various places, they had like a con exclusive comic, Archaea. Arcana had one of those that I wanted to get, and IDW had something. I picked up the Dave Stevens sketchbook from IDW. So I just had a list of things that were limited for the con, and I figure it's always a good idea to get those things before, it's just the craziness of the regular thing, just to be safe. And then, of course, people who read the forum might know that I picked up that very expensive piece of Cerebus art, the splash page from Cerebus number 17 that I had bought from someone a couple of weeks before con, but it was an art dealer who was going to be at con, so I picked it up live from him on previews night. So that was another main thing that I was doing, but it kind of put a crimp in my normal, relatively large budget for spending, on buying stuff at con. Because I normally, I usually just buy all kinds of sketchbooks and original art and commissions and old comics and all kinds of things. And this year I was very limited on the actual stuff that I bought because I was picking up this one very large, one large purchase.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you find that one piece of original art that you really want, I mean, some of them are just, I mean, they're not cheap. I mean, that's part of why they're so sought after or whatever. So I could see where that definitely would be a budget buster. It's funny because for me, I mean, I really don't chase down the exclusives at con. I really don't feel like getting in the lines and just jumping through the hoops for that kind of stuff. And it has been a number of years since I've done any kind of major, purchase spree or whatever at con. Now, when I was younger and there were a lot more, dealers with back issues and stuff like that, of the right vintage for what I was looking for, I mean, there were years I would park under the convention center, go up to a booth, be plowing through the back issues for the Marvel and DC stuff, see series I'd just never heard of, never seen. They'd have the whole run, so by golly, I'd buy the whole run. Then I'd, you know, get as much as I could carry, try to work a deal, take that down to the car, and then go back up and repeat, sometimes even at the same booth, sometimes just at other booths. But, you know, over the years, the nature of the back issues that are there, and frankly the size of my own collection, have changed such that, you know, I'm not really looking for the Golden Age. I'm not really looking for some of the key Silver Age stuff. Most of the more recent stuff I've pretty much already got. I'm usually looking for new things to read, and as the prices of these booths get more expensive every year, it's been pretty effectively pushing out some of the smaller up-and-coming publishers. And, you know, that was one of the things over the last, you know, decade or so that's kind of trimmed down my spending at con. The other thing this year is one of the things I did on preview night, and I figured I'll do it when I only have to lug the stuff around for a very little short period of time, is I headed over to the Atlas Games booth. And they're like the big role-playing game booth on the floor. And typically they'll have a bookcase full of superhero or sci-fi type role-playing games. And I'll go through, check my list, see what I've not got that they've got there. Usually they're you know, blowing away some inventory at great prices. And in a couple of years, I've spent a few hundred dollars there. This year, I saw no such bookcase of sci-fi or superhero role-playing games. I didn't spend a penny at that booth. That right there saved me a lot.
Yeah, I normally hit that booth, but I didn't even really browse at it because I didn't have any money to spend there. I will say, you know, you're accurate on your assessment of the back issues. Let's say within reason, because I wasn't really looking that much this year. Maybe Lenny can chime in. But in past years, they seem to have had a lot more of the dollar bin kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, just trying to maximize the space that dealers have, I don't know that as many of them bring dollar bin kind of stuff anymore. Although there were quite a few who would bring, you know, 50% off trade paperbacks. So if you're looking for good reads, you know, there's that. And then Archaea Studios, of course, has their, you know, buy two, get three free sale that they usually have.
Well, and, you know, Mile High had a big booth with a lot of actual comics and trades and stuff. And I'm not trying to say there's none of that, because there is some of that. But I think, you know, 10, 15 years ago at Con, if you wanted to buy a back issue of Batman, X-Men, Fantastic Four, almost any one issue, you know, you would be looking for would have been somewhere on the floor, whether you wanted to pay the price, whether it was in the condition you wanted or not. There was a point at which the hit rate for any random comic being searched for was pretty high.
No, you're right. I mean, the comics from the last 20 years are the ones that suffer a lot, except for certain key issues, you know, high ticket or sought after first appearances or key issues or something.
Or variant covers.
Or variant covers or things like that. But, you know, for the most part, the back issues that people bring are, you know, certain stuff from the, you know, 60s, 70s, and 80s, there's a lot of. I mean, there's certain dealers will have the Golden Age stuff, but there's a lot of 60s, 70s, and kind of, you know, really sought after 80s stuff, you know, of like the Teen Titans, Dark Knight, you know, kind of vintage of stuff, new Teen Titans.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, my closest point of reference would be the New York Comic Con, which I go to regularly. And, there's definitely a lot more, I think, not that there's that many at New York, but there's a lot more dollar type bins at the New York one. Like I remember at least four or five or six ones that had pretty significant number of comics for a buck a piece. Here in San Diego, I think there was really only one that I saw, and they didn't even have that much selection. Also, in terms of the trade paperbacks in New York, there were, especially last year, I remember, there were tons of $5 trade tables. Here you get 50% off. That's not such a great deal, especially on, you know, you could get routinely that kind of a discount, or 40%, 35% on Amazon. So you're just getting another 10%. It's not like a major stunner of a deal. So I thought that the, in terms of buying San Diego, that was the one area where I thought it was not a fantastic thing. And I think what Bob said is probably the reason, that the tables are more expensive and they have to make their money on the high ticket items.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, I wish, Lenny, you could have seen this show, again, 15, 20 years ago, when the cost for the booths was, you know, a fraction what it is now. Because it's getting up to, like, $2,400 for a 10x10 booth, I think. Or maybe that's for next year. But, I mean, it's expensive. Whereas back when it was cheaper, and even when the floor was smaller, I mean, there was also not the plethora of publishers, titles, variant covers, etc. It was easier for vendors to have the space to do a wide selection of back issues, and for those to be more likely, again, to hit what the majority of the people at the convention were kind of looking for. You know, it's just the way the industry has changed. I mean, back issues are not the major force in the market that they used to be.
Well, you know, and I'll put it into some kind of perspective, though, because, you know, a lot of the cheaper back issues from, you know, about the last 20 years, again, you know, the ones that are a buck or two a piece, you can find those pretty easily online, and they're mostly in you know, very fine to near mint condition. I think, and that's a really good option for people who are looking for those kind of things. You know, we've talked before on different things. You can go to Comic Collector Live, Atomic Avenue, MyComicShop.com. There's lots of places that have good, reliable sources for those issues. The higher ticket ones, I'm a little more reluctant to buy, you know, those online, because, you know, a little variation or miss, you know, a disagreement in grade can mean a lot of money. You know, so a lot of people, they like to buy those little more expensive. And when I say more expensive, I mean, that can go anywhere from $20 up to, you know, hundreds of dollars, or, you know, $1,000 or something for some of these. But, you know, when you're spending a little more money on these things, you like to be able to look at the thing and see, is this exactly what I think I'm getting? And that's kind of the market that a larger con like this is really, really shooting for. Whereas a lot of the smaller local cons, they have a lot of the cheaper books. You know,
I guess, you know, when I was going through the Golden and Silver Age Pavilion, where a lot of those dealers were, I never really saw much activity. Now, granted, it wouldn't take but a deal or two to, you know, pay for a table or a booth for some of these guys, depending what they're selling and stuff. So it's not like they've got to have a high turnover in books. But I'm curious how active, you know, that segment of the market is at the convention these days.
When I was walking around a couple of times with some different people, there were, at various points in the day, you know, and again, not wall-to-wall people, but there were people, you know, flipping through those and buying, you know, a stack of comics, which are going to come out to be usually a couple of $100s, as opposed to, you know, a stack of dollar books that might be $20 or $30.
Yeah. Well, again, the dollar books just don't make sense, because you got to do such volume, and you don't have room for that volume on the size booth for the what you're paying for the square footage. It's just the economics have changed for the thing over the years, and that makes sense.
But, you know, one thing that I find, that another thing that's really cool about the con, and something that is, let's just say, a unique position for the San Diego con, and it's maybe similar in New York, but it's got this over a lot of the smaller regional cons, and that is pretty much every publisher is there. You know, so every publisher's there. They've got creators there. A lot of the smaller publishers and small press and artists and things like that. So I like having the one-stop ability, you know, one-stop being spread out across, you know, a couple of 100,000 square feet of convention hall and huge crowds and everything. But, you know, still you can get to all these different places, and, you know, I can go to the Arkea booth and see all the different stuff that Arkea is doing. I can see what Arcana is doing. I can see what Boom is doing. I can see what IDW is doing, you know, and just, you know, all these different publishers. and it's just really cool. And even, you know, you got First, Second, and Fantagraphics, and, you know, just I could go on. There's lots of these publishers that are in the back half of previews, as well as Marvel and DC, although, you know, you go to the Marvel booth, for instance, and, you know, you guys probably went by there. It's relatively difficult, in my opinion, to determine that they actually make comic books when you go to the Marvel booth at Comic-Con. I mean, they maybe have a couple of giveaways or something, but it's all, you know, they had that hall of Iron Man armors, and they've got video games, and, you know, the last few years, you know, last year it was a big Thor throne, and, you know, the year before that I think was Captain America or something.
Actually, last year I think was the Helicarrier for Avengers, and the year before that was Thor. But yeah, I mean, they're heavy on the movie stuff. I think DC is at risk of, you know, shifting away from being a DC Comics booth to a DC Entertainment booth. They redid their booth design this year, and I mean, it's a very nice looking booth, don't get me wrong. It's they did a great job with it, but it had just enough of a vibe of kind of like an upscale art boutique versus a comic publisher. And one of the things I do think they made a mistake on was, and I think it was kind of this way last year too, they've got a raised stage with a big screen and a place where somebody can do sketches, which I think is incredibly cool. I love that. The problem is, it's now faced into the booth. So you've got to be inside the booth looking in that corner to go see what's going on that big screen. Whereas in some past years, and I'm thinking 5-10 years ago, they had screens that were kind of in a circle facing out, to where as you're walking by the booth, you can get pulled in of, oh, wow, that's a cool trailer they're showing. I want to find out more about that. You know, and I don't know, and I mean, you know, obviously DC has a very clear idea in their mind how well it worked out for them. But for me, I didn't find it personally drawing me into the booth as much as some of the designs in past years have. Whereas Marvel, it's a soundstage, essentially, pushing me. I can't get into the booth. There's no room. You know, it's pushing me out.
Yeah, right. Those big booths from the big two, they really weren't a draw for me. They weren't a draw here or in New York. They're just too much of a mob scene. And, you know, I didn't really feel like there was anything I needed to get there that I couldn't get on the web later.
Yeah.
It was cool at the DC booth, though, and I think it was Friday morning when we went in. First thing, we were just walking by, Steven and I, my son, and they were doing these pictures at the DC booth where they, you know, had a line, and you'd go up and they would do your photo, and they would kind of Photoshop you into either a cover for the Justice League comic book or a cover for Mad Magazine if you wanted. And, you know, these were free. And on Wednesday night and Thursday, there was a big line. And for some reason, when we went in on Friday morning, there was nobody there. I mean, the guy was there who was taking the pictures, but there was like one or two people in line. So we got in line and had our pictures taken, and we were Photoshopped into a Justice League cover. It was really cool. They actually printed out a copy of it and gave it to you right there. And then they gave you a little card that they, you know, shot a little barcode on, and it's got a code, and you can go later to, you know, dcconphoto.com and get a JPEG of that photo that you could download. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a really cool picture of you, Bob. I was jealous. That was a great picture.
And you got one at that Falling Skies booth, I guess.
Yeah, they put you into a scene from the show, and and then you get it off the website. That's fun. I wish there were more things like that. They had a Walking Dead one too, but you had to take your own pictures. You gave them your own camera, and you could get like a picture of you as one of Michonne's zombies. That was fun. Yeah,
that's cool. I like how they do that kind of stuff. You know, I don't know that it really translates to getting anyone really excited about reading the comics or whatnot, but, you know, it's at least a start and a step in that direction. And one of the things I try to do every year, and it usually takes me a couple of days to do it, is walk the entire floor of the exhibit hall, just to actually go see what's happening at all the booths and stuff, or at least get in the vicinity of some of the major booths. I mean, I'm not going to say that I got into the, you know, depths of what was happening at the Warner Brother booths or some of the gaming booths or some of the other ones that were just incredibly crowded. But, you know, I always enjoy seeing, you know, what exhibitors come each year, because in addition to all the publishers, you've got a lot of retailers, a lot of toy companies, movie companies, and just people who think they can sell stuff to the geek culture that shows up here. And usually I find a couple of things that are just kind of cool or whatever. Sometimes that results in me spending money, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, I always find that kind of fun. I will say that, you know, one of the things I've considered a major success in some past years that didn't happen this year was when I go through, like, the small press or the artist alley, and some of the stuff that's kind of almost the below the small publisher level, if you will, and just discover some cool things that are new. I really didn't discover that much this year. I picked up, I think, two hardcovers from Keen Spot for something that sounded pretty interesting, and they've got a few other projects in the works that I'll try to check out. But no new, you know, monthly comic series or whatever that really sparked my interest this year. And part of that is I buy a ton of comics, so, you know, it's not like I'm coming at this with a empty slate of, you know, what I'm reading or whatever. Did either of you guys try to walk the floor?
I did very targeted excursions onto the floor this year. I had looked up online things that I wanted to do, people that I wanted to see, and, you know, of course I tried to go to all the publisher booths, but as far as the, you know, that whole end of the hall, the whole part of the hall with the toy vendors, the TV places, TV and movies and video games and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I only walked through that area with the exception of I stopped at the Weta booth because they had just such a spectacular. They had those three trolls from The Hobbit mm-hmm. that were just huge, you know, and that just like kind of drew me in. So I spent a lot, and I love Lord of the Rings. So I spent some time looking at that booth and talking to some people there because I collect a lot of that Lord of the Rings stuff. So I hit that booth, but other than that, I pretty much skipped that whole part of the hall. But I did go through all the Artist Alley area, and on the other side, you know, I hit all the publishers, and I went to all the small press areas. But I didn't go this year through all the vendors because it would just, you know, like I can't spend any money. So.
Why risk the temptation?
Exactly. I would just see stuff and say, oh, I really want to buy that. Oh, I don't have any money. You know, so I kind of just avoided it. But it did cause me, I probably went to more panels this year than I've gone to in like the last 3 years combined. And I went to some really great panels.
I went to quite a few panels this year also, much more than in past years, and probably the past couple combined, but frankly, in some of the past years, aside from the podcasting panel and maybe one or two others, I just hadn't been going to too many. There were a few years at Con where going to panels was almost a fool's errand because of how long the lines were and stuff. This year, I felt the line management was amazing. I got into one line for one of the major panels and stuff, and you know, it was a decent length line, but, I mean, it moved fast. Once they started letting people in the hall, I mean, they emptied out that line in about 10 minutes. And I was just, you know, shocked by how quickly and how effectively they did that. And there are a few others that I just walked into at the last minute or even a few minutes late. So I thought they did an excellent job with that this year. What panels did you guys go to?
Well, on Thursday, I went to the 100th anniversary of Tarzan and John Carter, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It had, in addition to some of the artists, you know, like they had Tom Yeats, who's doing some of that. He does those pictures. Joe Jusko was there. But they had Ron Ely there on the panel, who played Tarzan back in the 60s. I think it was the 60s. And that was a really fun panel. You know, they were talking about Tarzan, and Joe Jusko pulled out this just massive Tarzan painting that he had done. It was commissioned by the Burroughs Estate. This thing must have been like 4 foot tall by, you know, 2 or 3 foot wide in a frame, and it was just really nice. It's like, but that wasn't that crowded, you know. And then after that one, I saw the Sergio and Mark show, you know, Sergio Aragonés and Mark Evanier, that they always do. And that was fun as usual. And I went to the Abstract Studio Terry Moore panel. That one was fascinating. Terry Moore is got some really interesting theories. He was talking about Hayes boson particles or something, and the Bern reactor, and all kinds of crazy stuff in addition to, just the comics and everything, and just talked about what he's going to be doing. He's going to be doing a Strangers in Paradise prose novel coming up next year. And, we just talked about a lot of cool stuff. So that was my Thursday, because there aren't any panels on Wednesday night, of course.
Well, there's the one or two that are basically showing some of the TV pilots,
right,
and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't do any TV type of things.
The only panel I went to Thursday was the podcasting one. I spent a lot of Thursday just walking the floor, and I covered quite a bit of it that day, actually. How about you, Lenny? Did you go to any panels on Thursday?
Yeah, I went to the Sergio and Mark panel, which I thought was excellent. That was the first time I had ever seen in person Sergio Aragonés, and he's just a delightful guy. You know,
yeah.
Every time he opened his mouth, he was saying something interesting, or he just made you feel like, wow, there's a guy I'd like to hear speak some more. It seemed like I went to almost all the panels I went to, or at least a lot of them, were moderated by Mark Evanier, and I've seen him do panels in New York also. Here he was all over the place, and just excellent panels throughout the show. And Thursday, that was a good start with the Sergio and Mark panel.
Yeah, I talked to him at one point, and he was saying he is doing like about 15 panels this year. So
he
always doing them. But a lot of his panels are ones that I think are very interesting. So I saw quite a few Mark Evanier panels myself.
Yeah, if you're interested in the history of comics and stuff, he gets a lot of just great people and has great discussions with them. So he's definitely a pro at moderating those sorts of things.
Very creator-centric.
Yeah.
So then on Friday, I saw The Artist's Way, which was kind of really concentrating on a lot of really cool artists. It had Gary Gianni, Joe Jusco, Mark Schultz, Jim Silk, and Tom Yeats.
Mm-hmm.
And the Comic-Con guy, Gary Sassaman, who gives out the Inkpot Awards, which are for excellence in comics, he busts out Inkpot Awards. Oh, and Tim Bradstreet was on that panel too. But he busts out these Inkpot Awards and starts handing them out. I guess Mark Schultz had gotten one years before, but he gave them to the other guys on the panel. So I got to see all those Inkpot Awards being given out, and they were a surprise to everyone, and they were just speechless, and it was really very kind of cool to see these guys getting their awards at this panel. And then the next one I went to was the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund History of Comic Censorship, which was fascinating. And it just, got me like, well, I need to go donate to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund after they're telling all these stories about, back in the past, but even today, the crazy stuff that they need to, defend people against with, just overzealous people, persecuting people for liking comics. It was just insane. I saw the 75th anniversary of Prince Valiant. I saw the Valiant Comics panel, where they continued a long tradition, which I had been part of back in the 90s, of giving out a gold logo cover comic to people at the panel. And we got a gold Exo Manowar #1. So I was there with a bunch of the guys from the Only the Valiant podcast were in the room. And boy, I thought I was a Valiant fan, but not compared to those guys. I'm not the guys who were real hardcore Valiant fans. I mean, they're real big Valiant fans. And then I stopped in and saw the writer's room with Jonathan Ross, where I missed the beginning of it when Robert Kirkman was there. Because I was still over at that Valiant panel, but I did get to see Ed Brubaker and John Layman when I got there.
Oh, that reminds me. I did on Thursday. I went to the Kirkman Walking Dead comics panel, and that was actually one of my favorite panels of the whole show. He's just a very entertaining guy, Kirkman, and Charlie Adler, the longtime artist on the book was there too, and it was just a lot of fun, and you could tell he was enjoying himself, and he's just a very witty guy. So that was a really good panel. And I also, on Thursday, I went to a panel on the year 1982, because that was the year E.T. came out, Blade Runner came out, I think the Wrath of Khan was that year, E.T., I don't know if I mentioned that, The Thing. So that was kind of a cool panel. That was different from a lot of the other panels I went to. It was more video and then people talking about their personal, you know, experiences with those things. And that was a lot of fun.
Now, you just reminded me of something there. Also on preview night, I was just walking by a booth on my way to get my Cerebus art. And I went at one of the art dealers. Charlie Adler was sitting there signing Walking Dead 100 comics. And there really wasn't any line at all, because it was like not by the main thing. It was kind of off on the side. So I stopped there and I bought a con exclusive Walking Dead 100, and he autographed it for me, and I didn't have to stand in. Like later in the week at the Image booth, the lines for Charlie and Kirkman were just insane. They gave out tickets, you know, for you to be able to get an autograph from these guys. Walking Dead was huge. Another thing, I was browsing with Trevor at an art booth, at the Ramita Man art booth, and I actually bought a piece of art there that I probably shouldn't have, but it was just this gorgeous George Perez page from the Teen Titans series. You remember that Titans series, John, where it was the one that the Atom was kind of running, and it had like Prism or something? Anyway, it was an issue from that series. It was Dan Jurgens did the pencils and Perez was on inks, and it was an issue where Warlord was the guest star, and there was this huge image of Warlord on it. You know how much I like Warlord, so it wasn't that expensive. So I was picking that page up, and I was like trying to get the attention of the guy, and I'm like, hey, you know, can I buy this? And the guy's just like distracted, and then we noticed that there's a guy standing there with this piece of art in his hand that's got $100,000 written on the back, and it's Jonathan Ross, who's the, you know, he's a writing America Got Powers, but he's a TV personality in Britain, and his wife's a billionaire of some sort, you know, but he's got this page, and like these guys are like, yeah, you know, don't bother me, guy, buying $100 piece of art. I'm dealing with this guy here, you know. But when he left, I kind of said, hey, Jonathan, you know, loving America's Got Powers. And he stopped and he talked to us, to Trevor and I, and you know, Trev's like, hey, can we see the piece of art you got? And he had the cover. It was the Jim Steranko cover to S.H.I.E.L.D. number 3. And as it turns out, he didn't pay cash for it. He traded like 6 other pieces of art for it. So he traded like, you know, a couple of EC pages, a couple of covers from other books, and like a Jack Kirby FF page that had the Watcher on it, and something else that I don't remember. But, you know, he had a long conversation with us about Steranko and about how much he loves Steranko, and he only did this many covers, and getting one of these was really cool, and he just talked about how he loves to collect, and he, you know, and then he was talking about America's Got Powers, and he's like, man, you know, I got most of it written, but, you know, Brian Hitch, he just hasn't been turning the art in. And Trevor's like, well, certainly you knew this about Brian Hitch. And he's like, I had no idea. So it was pretty funny when he said that. So anyway, it was just cool that, you know, he's just like, you know, like a fan like us buying stuff. And, you know, we got to, you know, talk to him as a fan, you know, to another fan. So it was fun.
There are a lot of celebrities that you can do that with. And that is one of the cool things about San Diego is, when you've got more celebrities per capita or whatever in that hall, you know, there comes a point where even some of the bigger ones almost become anonymous and lost in the crowd. And you can just, you know, sometimes bump up to them and have good conversations with them. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun when it's the celebs who are actually fans of the stuff and not just, you know, they're making their appearance, where they get kind of like ushered in by their security crew and they, you know, smile and pose for pictures, then they get ushered out. You know, these are guys, you know, there are quite a few of them who actually like comics and comics art and all this kind of stuff, and they're actually browsing around to be able to buy stuff, you know, right along with you. So
that's the types I kind of prefer. ones that are clearly, you know, actually interested in, you know, the medium, both as a fan, sometimes even as creators.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was just one of the cool things about it. You know, one of the other things that's really fun about Comic-Con is when they bring people from a show, it's not uncommon for them to bring, like, everybody from the show. One of the ones I went to on Friday was the Spartacus panel. My sister basically wanted me to go in there so she could get another ticket for the, you know, go get the stuff at the Claim the Freebie booth, or, you know, however that works. And it's like, fine, you know, and it was an incredibly fun panel. I mean, it's an incredibly bloody, gory show. I mean, the trailer was pretty disgusting, but the fans ate it up. And they had the two leads at first, then they brought out Lucy Lawless, and then they brought out, like, everybody else on the show. And there's not many conventions where, you know, they just pull out kind of all the stops like that. And I thought that was really cool. Now, one of the other ones that I found interesting, and this was actually on Thursday. You know, I'm a fan of Power Rangers. I like the stuff. But in past years at Comic-Con, they'll have, like, a panel in a small little room off to the side at best, and you don't see anything about Power Rangers on the floor. I mean, that changed big time this year with the 20th anniversary. They had a huge panel over in the Indigo Ballroom at the Hilton Bayfront. This is the first year I've ever actually walked over there and gone into there. That's a huge room. And they had it pretty full. And they had one of the original Power Rangers, one from the current series, and then the guy who plays Bulk, who was on, you know, both back then and now, which was kind of cool. And it was interesting just how, you know, with Saban taking the property back over, it being on Nickelodeon and stuff, how it's much more prevalent at Con. They had the big, you know, 20-foot Power Ranger statue over on the low number end of the hall, you know, pointing people to the booth, I guess it was Shout Factory, that had, you know, they're actually doing full season DVD releases and stuff. And this was one of the first years where I did one of what I call kind of the scavenger hunts, where you go to one booth, they give you the postcard, you got to go to all these other booths and get it stamped to show that you went to the booths and stuff like that to get a t-shirt. So I did that, and then Saturday it's a show up here at noon, and it was like 5th and Market or something, so it was a couple of blocks away, not too bad. And they unveiled what the next cast was going to be and stuff. And, you know, I get the shirt, and at first I'm thinking, you know, this is a kid's show. Odds are the shirt's going to be like an extra uber small that, you know, isn't going to fit. Thing fit fine. I was quite surprised, and it was a nice shirt, too. I actually found that while a lot of the giveaways this year were a little harder to come by and a lot less frequent than they have been in some past years, some of them, particularly with the shirts and stuff, wound up being fairly, you know, decent quality things. Because there have been a few others I was afraid if the wind picked up, it would just, you know, blow away in the breeze or something. But, you know, when you get something for nothing, you kind of got to take your chances.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of cool giveaways at different places. And that's a whole, you know, you were talking about also about con exclusives. You know, there's different categories of all these things. You know, a lot of the con exclusives that drive the most frenzy are these con exclusive toys and stuff. I don't get those anymore, but I used to in the past. In fact, that Morgan Spurlock Comic-Con film, one of the whole threads that he does through that film is, you know, some guy who goes to con to buy his, you know, con exclusive toys from, you know, Hasbro, Mattel, you know, those kind of places. And this year, you probably saw them walking around. I mean, those giant helicarriers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Those things were so huge. The boxes. I mean, I don't mind, but no. I just think that they shouldn't sell those on the con floor. It's like, you know, sell the person a ticket and have them go over to the Marriott to pick that thing up or something.
Or ship it to them.
Or ship it to them or something. Because, I mean, there were people running around with one of these in each hand. And, I mean, literally, what were they, like, four foot long or something?
They were like huge. 4 feet long, about 2 feet wide, and only about 6 inches deep, it seemed like. Maybe a foot deep, whatever. But, I mean, the length alone was pretty massive.
It's just very inconvenient for everybody else in that hall when there's so many people and these people are walking around trying to carry these gigantic boxes. of, you know, with this toy in it. And, you know, hey, I can appreciate it. I used to love that kind of stuff and collect that stuff myself. But, you know, putting that kind of mass of extra junk onto the floor that people have to carry around, especially given the placement of that Hasbro booth, where you pretty much guaranteed have to walk through quite a long distance of
concourse. Oh, yeah, because that's like at the back of the hall, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. One that tempted me was not that far away from the Hasbro booth. I think it actually was at the back. I forget which booth it was, though. And they had the Portal gun from the Portal video games. Mm-hmm. It was a full-size replica thing for $150. And fortunately, I put off, do I want to get it or not, long enough for them to have sold out. Otherwise, I'd have one.
Well, you know, cool. A lot of the con-exclusive comics that were not Walking Dead, let me put it that way. I think that Walking Dead con-exclusive sold out, like, the first night or early on Thursday, and they were selling them for, like, $25 by Saturday. But, you know, I got my Arcana exclusive comic. Yeah, it was no problem. There was no line. I mean, you know, I got things that, you know, that were limited in that, you know, this creator made it and he only made a couple of hundred of them, you know, that kind of thing. It wasn't really difficult to get those things, but the mass produced things from the big names, you know, would have the Hollywood and Marvel and DC behind them. Those are a little harder to get because there's mm-hmm. more people that want them. Did anyone buy a con shirt this year?
I did not.
Oh, I'm sorry, I did. Yeah, I got the David Finch Batman one. I thought it was very nice.
You lucked out, I guess. You found it when there wasn't a big line, because at certain points there was, like, they had capped the line and there were, like, hundreds of people waiting to buy the thing.
Yeah, you guys had warned me, and I just figured I'd brave it, and I just must have lucked into just the right minute, because I got there, they sent me to this wall to line up, and as soon as I got there, they moved the line from the wall right back up to where the cashier was. I was in and out of there in 5 minutes.
Cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I just didn't like any of the designs this year, frankly. I mean, they were good, I just, none of them made me think, wow, I really need to get that shirt.
Well, I actually, you know, it's funny because, like I said, I go to the New York one regularly, and I haven't bought a con shirt there in years because they're never good. You know, they're always, they're never shirts that I like. And then here, you know, at least the Batman one I thought was okay, so that got my money.
Again, the shirts were good. They have great artists, and they were good designs, but none that I felt, wow, you know, I just can't live without it.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a nice shirt. I don't wear T-shirts that much anymore, so that's why I skipped it. But, I mean, I liked that. The toucan one, which is kind of the old-timey mascot of Comic-Con, was kind of fun, too, but probably more so for, you know, old-timey Comic-Con fans and people who look at that and say, what the heck is this toucan, you know, shirt, which might have been your reaction to that one.
Like, yeah.
But, you know, they do like a big artist shirt each year. You know, I think they had Ethan Van Sciver 1 year when he was hot, and, you know, they got David Finch, and, you know, they tend to do, you know, usually a big Marvel or DC character with a very popular artist. So they usually will have a pretty nice shirt for con each year.
Yeah. Now, one of the other panels I went to on Friday, it was around 4 o'clock or whatever. It was in one of the rooms kind of on the back of the upper floor. It was the So You Want to Be a Comic Retailer panel. Those can be kind of interesting. Sometimes they get very much in the weeds or whatever, on, you know, aspects of being a retailer. Other times it's more just, you know, who's interested, why are you interested, and what questions do you have or whatever. And I thought the panel this year was just outstanding. They had Joe Field, who is, of course, the originator of Free Comic Book Day. He's also one of the main guys over at Comics Pro. They had Amanda Emmert, who's the lead executive or whatever. I mean, she's the mover and shaker at Comics Pro also. And she also had apparently just moved over the last year and opened up a brand new store. So she had a lot of kind of stories to tell about that experience. And that's something that, you know, I'm a process junkie. I'm interested in the business side of things. So, you know, I found the panel just endlessly fascinating, hearing the different retailers with their different perspectives on things. And I've got to say, Amanda Emmert really needs to, you know, do a regular column somewhere or a podcast or something, because she is the most upbeat, enthusiastic person about, you know, selling comic books that I've ever seen. You know, last year she was at the Comics Doomed panel, and I thought her perspective was a little, you know, maybe rose-colored glasses and stuff. But, you know, based on the discussion I had with her afterwards and stuff, and what's, you know, happened in the intervening year in the industry and stuff, I think she's optimistic, but not naively or unreasonably so. You know, it's nice to see that there are some really smart retailers out there, really passionate retailers out there, and, you know, that they're actually trying to you know, move things forward and make things better for the industry. So anyone who goes to San Diego Con or any other convention where Comics Pro is doing kind of a panel like that, if you're the least bit interested in retailing and stuff, I highly recommend that one.
Mm-hmm.
Was quite a bit of fun.
Very cool.
Now, on Saturday, I went to one or two other panels. I went to the graphic novel From Idea to Finished book or whatever with Brian Haberlin. He had a book at one of the booths up, I think it was in like, Hall F or G up at the wall or whatever, by the lobby. That is this, you know, monster tomb. I mean, it's like about 2 feet long, about a foot tall or whatever. It's landscape versus portrait, and about 400 pages thick. I mean, this thing was just a monster of a graphic novel, and it's all original material. And he was kind of going through, you know, the highlights of how he went from a concept to actually putting this whole thing together. And it was a fascinating panel. And what was really mind-blowing about that project, Anomaly, is, I mean, the price tag on it's not that hefty. It's like $40 maybe? I could be wrong on that. I think I ordered it from Amazon for like $25. And again, it's like 400 plus pages or something. But one of the things they were showing, and they had like an iPad or whatever, they'd hold the iPad over almost any page of the graphic novel, and it would pop up with an augmented reality kind of 3D thing, or, you know, extra featurette or whatever. So, I mean, these guys went just all out for that, which I thought was just, you know, cool, expanding the technology and kind of what you can do with it, plus just telling a regular, you know, really good story even without all those bells and whistles. And he was doing some of the, you know, here's how I took the page, here's how I, you know, got the inking, the art done, all that kind of stuff. It was very interesting. And again, I'm a process junkie, so right, yeah, up my alley.
There was a good panel like on that topic on Sunday. It was called Cover Story.
Mm-hmm.
Where they, Mark Evanier again does that one, but he had Charlie Adler from The Walking Dead, Tim Bradstreet, Becky Cloonan, and Mark Schultz, and he has a buddy of his pick five covers from each artist, five or six, and then they show them up on the screen, and it's just like random covers, and like the point is he wants them to have some that they don't like and some that they do like. And then they all kind of talk about, you know, what they were thinking and how they designed that cover and if they think it works, if they were proud of it, if they didn't like it. That's a fun panel. They do that each year. They do it at WonderCon also, but it always has different artists, so you always get something different out of that panel. So that's a really cool one. I like that. On Saturday, I think you went to this. Did you go to the That 70s panel on Saturday, Lenny?
Yeah, I did. And, yeah,
that was a really good panel. That had again Mark Evanier, right? It had Marv Wolfman, Steve Skeets, Steve Englehart. Was Herb Trimpe on that?
No, he was supposed to be on it.
He was supposed to be there, and he didn't make it, huh?
He got supposedly a high priced commission, and he couldn't pass it up. That's what they were saying.
Elliot Magan was there, right?
Yeah, and Trevor Von Eden, you know, not such a high-profile artist, but I loved his Thriller from back in the day.
Yeah, I loved Thriller also. So, you know, they just talked about Bronze Age comics, and it was really fun. And then the Quick Draw A whole bunch of us saw that one. It had Sergio Aragonés, Scott Shaw, and Keith Knight, who is a new guy on that panel, but he does something called the K Chronicles, which I had never heard of, but he was a very entertaining artist, so I'll have to check him out. And then I saw the Image Comics Experience, where they talked about all the new stuff coming from Image. I saw the Skybound panel.
Going back to the Image one for a second, I got a question on that.
Sure.
Because I'd been to the Image booth, you know, by this point we're about halfway through the con. I'd wandered around, seen what they had to see, but I think it was either Saturday night or it might have been Friday night. I think it was Friday night, actually. You know, I was at the hotel. I was getting ready to go to bed, but I figured, you know, I just want to go, you know, hit comic book resources real quick. And what I stumbled across was an 8-page preview of an upcoming Image book, and I'm wondering if they had mentioned it at that panel. It was MacGyver, and they got the guy who actually created and wrote most of the series to do the writing.
They did talk about that.
I was surprised they didn't have that plastered somewhere on their booth. I mean, geez.
It was funny. They announced a lot of stuff from 2013. They had Joe Casey is doing a couple of new series. They've got Derek Robertson, along with the guy who wrote the movie The Book of Eli, which I forget what the guy's name was, but they're doing a book called Oliver that's kind of a steampunk Oliver twist. Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios are doing a book called Pretty Deadly. Chris Roberson is doing a new book with them. James Robinson is doing a book with them with art by Jay Bone. Howard Chaykin and Matt Fraction are doing a book with them. J. Michael Straczynski starting a studio imprint at Image.
Well, he's restarting Joe Comics. Yeah, restarting that.
Greg Rucka and Michael Lark are doing a sci-fi series. And Jay Ferber, who we're both big fans of, John, is doing a new series. Cool. So, I mean, they talked about, and all these creators were there on the panel. I mean, this was just, in my opinion, just a star-studded lineup of guys that were at this panel. It was fabulous, you know, and they're talking about all this new stuff that they're doing.
Well, what got me about the MacGyver thing is, I mean, Richard Dean Anderson has a fan following. I mean, he was on TV for, you know, 15, 20 years nonstop and stuff. How many of the people walking around that convention center may not read comics, but were fans of him, either on MacGyver or Stargate SG-1. And if they had seen, hey, they're doing a MacGyver comic, it might have at least sparked some curiosity and some interest. That, to me, seemed like something that, for the crowd at Comic-Con, even the non-comics crowd, something that they could have and probably, I think, should have, you know, promoted a little bit more heavily there.
I think you've got a good point there. You know, it's that's the kind of cross promotion that, you know, we've talked about before, where like it mystifies me sometimes when, you know, a comic shop doesn't have, you know, Star Wars comics and, you know, G.I. Joe and all these other comics that, you know, your man on your street or Buffy, you know, things like that, you know, especially more when it was on TV more. But, you know, that kind of stuff like front and center, because people are going to see that and say, oh, I recognize that.
Well, and with the MacGyver comic, I mean, there was 8 pages on comic book resources. I read through them. It read like an episode of the show. The voice, you know, it sounded like the voiceover would have sounded like, you know, it read like it would have sounded like or whatever, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It was very true to the material, and the material is, what, 20 years old. But again, you get the guy who created the show and wrote, you know, the majority of the episodes doing it, you know, go figure. So it's not like they're cashing in on the name or trying to just do a quick, you know, cash grab there or whatever. I think they're actually doing it well. Whereas, you know, there are a lot of times somebody will license a property, put some stuff out, and it's good, but it's not great, or it's not as true to the source material as this, at least the 8 pages seem to be. So I was surprised to discover that on comic book resources, having, you know, again, walked the floor, you know, by that point already.
I mean, that's one thing about the Image booth, since it is kind of an aggregation of creators. Eric Stevenson made the point in the panel, you know, he's saying none of these people work for Image Comics. You know, these people work with Image Comics, but they're doing their books. You know, they're not working for Image.
Yeah.
We're helping them publish the book, but they own it. It's their book. And that's the thing with the Image booth then is, you know, whatever creators are kind of like there at the booth, that's kind of what they're promoting at the booth, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's because Image simply traffics the books. They really don't promote the books. And that's, I think, one of the areas that if Image were to improve on would benefit them immensely.
Yeah. I will agree with you on that. You know, that was, I saw the Skybound panel after that, that Kirkman and his crew were in for. The Oddball Comics panel, which I go with every year with Steven. You popped in on that one, Lenny. What do you think of that?
Oh, I was very pleasantly surprised, Bob. That was an excellent suggestion. I wasn't on my radar from my initial review of the panel descriptions, and it was just a fun panel. You know, he's a very entertaining guy, intelligent guy, Scott Shaw, and I really enjoyed the panel.
I mean, basically, this whole panel is he just puts up these crazy comic covers from his 50 years of collecting comics or whatever, and just makes humorous comments about all these crazy comic book covers that he finds. You know, it's just really oddball comics. I went and saw the spotlight on Mark Waid.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting.
That was a really cool panel, and Mark Waid got an Inkpot award at his panel. You know, that was a very cool panel. And then I went and saw the Raw Studios panel, which is Tom Jane and Tim Bradstreet, and they played kind of the world premiere of this Punisher fan film that's all over the internet that you do not want to watch, John, by the way.
I kind of figured that, yeah.
I kind of figured that already. But, you know, it just came up, and it was like they talked about some other stuff. They're doing some more Bad Planet comics, and Bill Stout was there, and he had like 8 pages, fabulous penciled pages that he was showing around of this book, and just looked great. They had dinosaurs, of course. This is Bill Stout. But, you know, they showed this fan film that Tom Jane made where he's Punisher, but we didn't know it was a Punisher film because it comes up and it just says My Comic-Con Movie or something like that. It's just like it plays and, you know, at the end, it's kind of revealed that it's Punisher. So it was very different for me seeing that because, first of all, I was sitting in the front row. Tom Jane was sitting about 5 feet from me on the edge of the stage. The guy's barefoot all the time. He's just sitting there. And, you know, we didn't know it was a Punisher film. Whereas now people who see it on the internet, it's kind of like, hey, go look at Tom Jane's Punisher film. And, you know, so they have an expectation. Plus they're seeing it on, you know, by themselves on this computer screen as opposed to, you know, we're seeing it on this big, you know, Comic-Con room screen with, you know, 50 or 60 people in the room, or maybe there were 100 people in the room. And Ron Perlman popped in because he was in the movie. And that was very fun. I also saw the Ted Nypha, Courtney Crumrin panel. That's a series I read from, it's coming out from Oni right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. So that was my Saturday of panels.
Cool. Sunday morning, instead of going to panels, since there's sometimes deals to be had, I usually spend that morning kind of doing a quick walkthrough of not the entire floor, but a lot of it, at least all the main exhibitor booths, or retail exhibitor booths, I should say. So the low number end of the halls and then some of the high number end, but I'll skip like the Lucasland Star Wars area and stuff that were, you know, there's not really stuff I'm likely to go buy. I think that was the day that I picked up a couple of things at the Keen Spot booth. Cause like I said, I got 2 hardcovers there. But really I didn't do much, other shopping on Sunday morning. And then by Sunday afternoon, I just wasn't feeling too well. So it was, kind of just find a place to camp out for a bit, which was, of course, oh so fun to do at the convention center because there's like nowhere to sit.
Yeah, I know. That's one thing that they really could do. And boy, they like really hassle you for people who sit on the floor next to a wall or something. They come around and roust you out of there, and it's really tough.
Yeah, it did kind of suck.
100-some thousand people, and there's probably 100 chairs. Other than in the panels, there's lots of room to sit down in the panels.
Well, at one point, I was sitting, leaning up against the wall at the end of Lobby F, kind of up past the Nickelodeon booth and stuff, near the Fox booth. And it was, I don't remember what time, it was sometime mid-afternoon. And it's like, you know, the crowds aren't too bad. And then all of a sudden, I guess it was like the Doctor Who panel let out or something. And then it was like this mass of humanity suddenly materialized on the floor. It was crazy for about another, you know, half hour or 45 minutes or whatever. And then it got back to, wow, the crowd's not too bad again. And that's one of the downsides of Hall H, you know, just gathering this huge crowd and then boom, letting them loose on the hall floor. So, I mean, I would have liked to have gone to the Doctor Who panel, but not enough to have, you know, stood in the Hall H line just in general, and certainly not at that point.
Yeah, there were plenty of Hall H panels that looked good to me, too, but I simply made the choice. I wasn't going to waste a third or a half a day just standing on a line to go to a single panel.
Yeah. And again, that's part of why in some years I just don't go to too many panels. The lines are more than I want to, you know, sit through.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really go to any panel that I stood in any line for at all. But again, I stayed well clear of the Marvel and DC panels, the big ones, and I didn't go to any Hollywood things.
Yeah, I guess the biggest panel I went to was the Kirkman Walking Dead comics panel, and I showed up 5 minutes before it started, and the line was unbelievably long. But I figured, hey, what the heck, I'm here, it's going to let in 5 minutes. So I go to the back of the line, and it went very fast, very fast. And when there was about 20 people from the door, they say, sorry, we're all filled up. If you're online now, you're not going to see the panel. Go away. And no one moved. And then about 2 minutes later, they started letting people in, and everyone got in.
That's so interesting.
Yeah,
it's also not uncommon for lines to get told one thing and then have that literally about face a few minutes later. One of the things that was happening, particularly Sunday afternoon, at some of like the Warner Brother booth, the Fox booth, and stuff, they had, you know, misrationed, I guess, or been a little too conservative with how they were giving stuff away all weekend. And it's a give it away now or you know, they're stuck with it or whatever. So they would, you know, accumulate a line, shoo people away, and then the line would, you know, go through, and then it's time to build a new line. So depending how you timed it, you could just circle around these booths and get the freebie a couple of times, or whatever freebie they were handing out each time, because it would change depending on what was in the next box they opened. Or you would be constantly getting shooed away if there's no line here to be had. So there's definitely some confusion going on at times with that sort of thing. And it's unavoidable.
And also some strategy to be had for people who like scam a bunch of extra free stuff, right?
Yes, there is a reason. There's a reason I drive. My sister usually accumulates quite a bit of stuff between her and a couple of her friends. They formed what they call a mutual minion society, where each of them kind of helps the others go get what they want and stuff, and they're able to pretty effectively coordinate through text messaging and stuff, you know, what booths are doing, what handouts, when, where you need to go, where there's not a line, to go get the ticket, to get in the line, to get the autograph, or, you know, whatever. You know, I personally don't play that game for the most part, but I did get sucked into a couple of lines here and there and sat through a panel or two just to, again, get that magic ticket that at the panel they don't explain, but if you know what the right thing, you know, to head over to the Marriott and go to the, you know, go claim the stuff room or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but, yeah, by the time Sunday afternoon came around, I was wiped out. I was ready for the convention to end a couple hours before it did.
Yeah, on Sunday I went to a lot more panels. I went to the annual Jack Kirby tribute panel.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny, you were at that, right?
Yeah, decent. A little. I would have liked a little more on. Like they didn't have any visuals at all. That would have been kind of a good thing to have at the panel. But still, it was nice to hear people talking about Jack Kirby, and that was good.
And then there was the Digital Comics Price Fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the Fine Line of Inking that had Gary Gianni, Klaus Janson, Rudy Nebris, and Mark Schultz. And I believe Rudy Nebris got a Inkpot Award at that one. And then I saw that cover story that I had talked about before. And then Super Secrets, Lifting the Curtain on the Man of Steel, which was actually kind of an interesting one. Mark Waid was there with the guy called Larry Tye, who wrote a book, a biography about Superman. But, you know, Mark Waid's a huge Superman fan, so just listening to those guys talk was fun. Oh, and another, I forgot what day it was on, but I went to the IDW Artists Edition panel.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of found that one and went to it, because I love those artist editions that they do.
Yeah, I also went to the Darwin Cook panel, which I enjoyed a lot. He's a very intelligent guy, and it's really a pleasure to hear him talk about the way he creates his comics. And it was a pretty enthusiastic crowd. I enjoyed that a lot.
I'm thinking I might have gone to one or two other panels, but for the life of me, I can't remember what they were. I was using the Android app they had this year on my phone. And one of the problems I had Sunday is, despite me having, you know, selected a bunch of things to go to, none of them showed up on on the app.
Oh, wow.
I think that's part of why I missed that Digital Comics Price Fight one. But, you know.
I went to 23 panels, all told,
counted
them up, which is a lot of panels. I mean, it's like I said, in previous years, if I had gone to, like, 5 or 6 panels, that was a lot of panels to go to. And this year, and I had a really great time going to all these panels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing about the San Diego Con is, you know, people say, hey, you know, it's all the media and Hollywood and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Well, that's true. There is all that stuff. But I still think there is more comics than any other con out there, because I went to 23 different comics panels that were not Marvel and DC panels, you know, so there were a whole bunch of Marvel and DC panels also. There were a whole bunch of other panels I would have liked to go to that were maybe conflicting with these. I mean, at any given point in time, there were probably 3 or 4 comic book panels going on.
Well, I mean, they had, you know, I think around over 600 different panels over those couple of days. And sure, some of those are going to be, you know, movie pilots or TV pilots and, you know, movie casts or whatever. But you're right. There's a ton of stuff about comics at this convention. And, you know, I think personally it's at the point where despite still being a very comic book heavy convention and something where you could spend your entire time doing nothing but, you know, enjoying the comic book aspect of it, I do think aspects of the focus and certainly the vibe and the buzz has shifted away from comics towards the movies and the games and stuff. But I think it's done that just because that's more popular, not because comics have been squeezed out by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, that's simply just not true.
No, and that's a very good point. It's like the, you know, just because there's buzz for, you know, like, heck, even go to entertainmentweekly.com or pick up like Entertainment Weekly magazine and they've got Comic-Con, you know, issues going on with all the stars and stuff. And it's like, if you just have the external view of the con, you'd think, wow, it's just all media. But, you know, that's the stuff that's popular with the general public. It's what gets publicized, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know. But if you love comics and you step in the door, you know, and look around, there is so much comic stuff going on at the con. It's just all there for you. You don't even have to look that hard to find it. It's everywhere in that convention center.
It's funny, though, because I think if somebody were to have been following me around and looked at what I had purchased and stuff like that, they would have assumed I'm really not a comic fan. Because it was turning out that, you know, few of my purchases were comic book related. I mean, they were I guess dollar-wise, about half of them were. But, you know, I was spending more on some of the Sentai stuff. I got a book, I got a toy on that, you know, things like that. So I think it's really hard to tell what people are truly interested in based on where they spend their time and what they visibly have gotten excited about. I mean, there are a lot of people that, you know, hey, look, that's Kevin Bacon up on the Fox, you know, the upper deck of their booth or whatever. I mean, you know, that's cool, but maybe they're also huge fans of video games, comics, movies, you know, whatever.
Well, sure, because you buy every comic in the world practically, you know, just regular. So, I mean, there's not that many more that you can pick up at Comic-Con. So, you know, you don't see all the Super Sentai stuff anywhere else. I mean, here there's just a great opportunity to indulge that extra part of your collecting.
Exactly.
And I think the same is true for a lot of people. I mean, you can pick up, you know, some role-playing games. You can pick up video game stuff. You can pick up toys. Because a lot of people who are into comics are into other ancillary areas of collecting also. And it's all here. You know, it's all at that con, and you can find it all there and enjoy it all there, revel in it all there.
Well, and again, that's part of why I try to walk the floor every year. Because what is there to be found, sometimes hidden away, sometimes just in surprising amounts, shifts sometimes drastically from year to year. You know, there was one year where it seemed like there were just a ton of booths about, you know, how to do comics, how to draw, magazines about that, books about that, you know, all sorts of things. Other years, it was very, you know, you couldn't walk down an aisle without seeing, you know, people in Sailor Moon costumes. You know, other years, suddenly everybody is dressed up as, you know, somebody from, a Harry Potter or what have you. So it's interesting to see what aspect of fandom just becomes, you know, almost the most prevalent or whatever. And, you know, it's interesting because I used to really enjoy going to San Diego to see kind of the comic industry, you know, coalesce into one physical location for a couple of days and kind of get a feel for, you know, is this an upbeat year, a downbeat year? What's the mood about comics like? And, you know, this year I found it almost impossible to gauge that. Because while there was all of that there, it was being kind of masked by what movies are coming out, what TV shows are coming out, you know, all of this other stuff that, I mean, again, it hits the same core audience. You know, I watch a ton of TV shows. I love movies. You know, I'm glad all of this stuff is there. It would be nice if the crowds weren't quite so bad. But, you know, hey, it's really interesting to see kind of what the convention has grown into, and, you know, if they ever expand the convention center, what it would continue to grow into if it had a little more room.
Now, let's talk a little bit about off-site from the con, because another thing that's interesting, I think, is the fact that even if you're not physically inside the convention center, there is now so much overflow into the surrounding gas lamp area. And I'm not talking about the hotels that are officially part of the con, because you still really need a badge to get into the panels at those places. But, you know, we're talking about Trickster and like that Walking Dead Escape and
that,
you know,
extra stage.
Yeah, the stuff at the Hard Rock Hotel, and, you know, Entertainment Weekly had something somewhere, and there were just like art exhibits at various, you know, they just like take some of these storefronts and they just turn them into these impromptu, you know, places there. It's just, there's so much stuff outside the con. You know, they even had like, I walked across one day for lunch with Trev to this fish restaurant that's right on the other side of the trolley station. And they had like a whole grim, you know, the television show Grimm maze set up, and you kind of walk through the maze, and on the other end of it was this restaurant that we wanted to eat at.
I passed that every day from where we were parking.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my sister and I have kind of nicknamed that intersection there at 5th and Gaslamp and stuff right there at Harbor Drive as kind of the gauntlet. Because as you're coming down that one intersection, crossing the trolley tracks, the train, and trying to get across, everybody and their dog seems to be out there either in costume or promoting something or handing you a flyer, a postcard, a comic book, or a magazine or something, or a backpack, one of those big bags or whatever, or a t-shirt, or, you know, if you just mill around and circle in that one intersection all day, yeah, you know, you could come away with just an amazing amount of just stuff. Some of it good, some of it not so much. I was surprised how aggressively the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic book was getting pushed this year. And I think that's a great idea.
They had to have given out tens of thousands. I mean, because every time I walked by, they were like handing out an ash can of that thing. I mean,
and they were doing that at that intersection. They were doing that on the hall floor. I mean, if you were looking for that ash can to get it and couldn't find it, it's because you weren't trying. But
I don't see how you could not have one of those coming away from that con. It was just, I picked them up and I would give them away to people. And it's like, here, you want them? It's like, I got so many of them.
Well, one of the things I did with my sister and some of her friends on Tuesday before con was we went over to the Cabrillo National Monument on the other side of the bay. And the Hilton Bayfront had that, multi-story banner or whatever for, I guess it was Revolution. And we could see that from the bay, the other side of the bay, like 5 miles away. Now, all you could make out was it was a big power button. You couldn't tell what it was for, but, I mean, frankly, even right up close to it, that's about all you could make up. And if you didn't know what Revolution was and looked carefully, you wouldn't know what it was based on that. So, I mean, it astonishes me how much trouble they'll go to advertise something and how cryptic those advertisements tend to be. Like I was saying earlier, the thing for the Power Rangers where they were unveiling the new team, that was at 5th and Market. So that was about 5 blocks away from the convention center. And that drew a pretty sizable crowd, enough that they had to have people directing traffic around stuff. And they'd put a big mural up on the side of a wall at one of these restaurants or whatever that was, 20, 30 feet, long or something. And a little bit further down that block, I think it was it Yahoo or some internet thing was doing some, interactive TV kind of a walk through this, let us show us, our stuff and we'll give you a t-shirt at the end kind of a deal. And like you said, those pop-up stores are just all over the gas lamp. Some are more cool than others. In past years, they had Flynn's Arcade from Tron. It's just amazing how much of the surrounding area just gets engulfed by this convention.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it's crazy.
And that's a fun aspect of it. The fact that you know when you go out after the show or you're there at lunch, you look around and you just see people, more comics people, streaming all around you.
On the one hand, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Having stayed in past years at the Gaslamp Hilton right there across the street from the convention center, it also can be really noisy up until, 11 o'clock at night when they got to shut some of that stuff down with all the parties going on and stuff like that. So if you're actually trying to, get some sleep or something at a reasonable hour, which apparently a lot of people are not, there's
sleep.
Some of that.
What is that?
And frankly, I find trying to eat in the gas lamp to be almost a fool's errand at this point for a lot of it. We found a friend of my sister's found a place called Gaijin on, I think it was 4th and up a couple of blocks. It was actually just down the street, just half a block from Rock Bottom Brewery where we had the dinner Thursday night. And it was a Japanese cuisine place that had opened up a couple of months earlier. And had some excellent food at really good prices with a gluten-free menu. So I wound up eating there a couple of times and really enjoying it. But, past years, who knows what was in that slot.
Well, we'll have to, if it's still around, we'll have to do our podcasting dinner at that place next year.
I think what happened at Rock Bottom this year, and I'm sure it had to happen at a lot of other places, was when the hall empties at 7 o'clock and everybody makes it into the gas lamp starving, all of these places are just overwhelmed. I heard one of the waiters saying that night that they double staffed or whatever. And I'm like, no. For Comic-Con, particularly the first night or whatever, you tell your entire staff that works at the restaurant or has worked recently at the restaurant, you're working these couple of days. Because, the amount of hungry people they've got to feed.
All hands on deck, right?
Yeah. And then some, yeah. They were just overwhelmed and good to have business, but good to be able to handle the business too.
Yeah.
You know, that was, I'm going to say, in a tie for first place for one of the worst two dinners I had.
Well, they were, the service was, you know, like you said, I mean, it's not fair to necessarily pick on them, but I mean, it was, in all the years that we've been going there, it was absolutely the worst service I've ever experienced there.
We've had some service there that was not good before, but I think at this point, the two we had, and I do not blame them for this, they were shell-shocked. They were not getting the support they needed from the other people in the restaurant. I was overhearing at the table next to us where food was coming up. It was not what was ordered. The waitress was telling that to the guy, and he's like, well, that's what I got. You know, and I'm like, geez, that's not giving her any help. You know, so, I mean, again, the whole place was just swamped.
But I guess it's the place you go to. I mean, I went to an Italian restaurant in the Gaslamp District on Saturday night, and I had no problems. It was a good meal. The service was good. You know, when we went out on Sunday night, maybe that's already after the con, and the service was okay there.
Well, that place was, I mean, I thought it was going to be a lot. I think on Sunday, people are so burned out from the con that they're fleeing in all directions. You know, it was tough. I mean, even like it was 2 hours after the con closed by the time we finished dinner and I was ready to leave. And it was really difficult to get away from the convention center, even at that point with the traffic. You know, but we went to Joe's Crab Shack that's out in the marina behind the convention center after the con floor closed on Sunday night. And it was good. I mean, a little pricey, but, you know, whatever. And I went to Buca di Beppo on Friday night with the comic art fans, people from the comic art fans list. And, you know, we had decent service there. And that was, you know, it was a pretty good crowd.
When I went to Gaijin, which is just a few doors down, and it felt like it was almost directly beneath where we ate at Rock Bottom. We were so far back on the upstairs there. We had great service there most of the nights. The first night, not so much. But I think that was just a fluke because it was before con even started on the Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you can't get a great meal with great service during con. You certainly can. But it's one of those things that kind of all bets are off. It's really pot luck as to how well it's going to turn out. On Saturday, because as you were mentioning, just how crowded and how hard it is to get out of there, Saturday night after, I guess it was the Mark Wade panel and stuff, I hooked up with my sister, found her and stuff. We headed over to the Omni. We had a friend staying there, so they were going to be leaving, so we wanted to spend some time with them just chatting and hanging out with them because we don't see them that often. And they're like, hey, you know, we know you guys are hungry. We've already eaten, but, you know, we can order some room service and get you some food. And we're like, well, don't know what we can have here. Okay, we call down. We figure out what they can do that's gluten-free and stuff. And they're like, it's going to be a little bit, you know. And I guess they told my sister it'll be about an hour. It's like, well, it's Saturday night. It's Comic-Con. Okay. Hour goes by. Nothing. Another half hour or so goes by. Nothing. Of course, we're talking. I'm not really noticing the time go by, neither. I think it's my sister or her friends. You know, whatever. It's fun. And then finally the phone rings. And we're like, if they're asking for directions to the room, I'm really worried. It turns out they'd run out of the gluten-free stuff, and they couldn't feed us. And they were just now figuring that out about 2 hours later. And it's like, again, some of these places can handle, you know, the masses of humanity. Some can't. Some just get caught flat-footed through no fault of their own. So that was one where, you know, we basically wound up calling it a night shortly thereafter and going back to the hotel, thankful we had a kitchenette there that we could make some stuff because we'd stock some groceries there for just such an occasion. But
yeah, I think
mean,
a lot of people hit that Ralph's in the downtown area and pick up food. You know, that's that grocery store probably does a lot of business that week too.
Yeah. Well, one of the criteria for hotels when I go to con, it's got to have a breakfast that comes with the room. And not just a breakfast, but something I can actually eat. Typically, we'd been staying, like I said, at the Gaslamp Hilton. That's the only place we've stayed prior to this year. Because Khan had booked every hotel, every room at every hotel for literally a 3-mile radius, we were over at Liberty Island, which is what used to be the Naval Training Center on the west side of the airport. So we were, you know, about a 15-20 minute drive away through downtown. And part of that's just downtown traffic and stuff. It was only about 3 or 4 miles. Anyways, not only did we have the kitchenette, they actually had a breakfast, scrambled eggs and that kind of stuff in the morning. Now, some days it was better. We had bacon, we had hash browns. Other days they had, what was it, tater tots that were not safe for me to eat, sausage that wasn't safe for me to eat. So a lot of it was just scrambled eggs. But I find going into the convention floor on a full stomach, well-fed, essential. Because I've got a day job where I'm sitting on my butt in front of a computer all day. And I've had that kind of a job for the last, 20 years or whatever. And 20 years ago, I was in much better shape. The com was literally a fraction of the size it is now. As it's gotten bigger, and, well, frankly, I've gotten bigger too, I find this to be something of a physical marathon to go through with all the walking I do. So starting out, again, well-fed and trying just to survive the day is sometimes a little challenging.
No, I can imagine. I don't have quite the same dietary restrictions that you do, but, we stayed at a Hampton Inn and they had breakfast every morning. They had scrambled eggs and, sausage and various kinds of breads that I don't eat, but, if I did eat them, I wouldn't have the kind of physical reaction that you have. But Steven was able to, have a waffle and fruit and things like that. So that's always good to have a good breakfast before, because then I wasn't just totally starving at lunchtime. I mean, I had lunch a couple of days, but I didn't have lunch every day at the con. I mean, I went over with Trev one day and had lunch, and Lenny, we ate up at that thing the one day right off the back of the convention center. It's overpriced and
okay.
Okay-ish.
I usually have some emergency rations in my backpack to where if I'm just starving, I can at least nibble on something, but it's a minor snack at best. But I mean, the sodas were going for $4, the hot dogs for $8. The prices at the convention center are not cheap.
Yeah, which are not set by the San Diego Con.
That's the convention
center. And they're just, they got themselves a captive audience, so they're taking people for all they can get. But that's good advice is, bring bottles of water or bottles better than cans. I always go and I like to drink, Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, so I will buy some bottles, like the 20-ounce bottles of soda, and I make sure I bring those in my backpack to the con, a couple of them. You could bring a couple bottles of water. And, I bring snacks, just like you, things that you can eat. You can bring nuts, you can bring trail mix, you can bring, candy, you can bring granola bars, whatever you like to eat, just bring that along, and have breakfast before you go, eat something during the middle of the day, and then you can go out with friends or something and have a nice dinner somewhere. But, I'd much rather spend $20 or $30 on a dinner somewhere than to spend, $20 buying a hot dog, bag of chips, and a soda.
It's just... Well, one of the things that Kathleen and I, my sister and I, did differently this year was, since we were at a hotel that was not just across the street, we were essentially treating it like we were doing a day trip to the convention, because literally we were. We drive over, we park, and in the back of the car, we had a cooler that had sodas. Again, we did bottles to where they're easy to take around and reclose. It gives you a lot more flexibility on stuff, because that way, like you said, you could just toss it in your backpack. Your hands are free as you go through the gauntlet and want to pick up whatever, pamphlets, flyers, postcards, business cards, or, whatever freebies are getting thrust your way. But we also had, other things we could snack on, pretzels, stuff like that, gluten-free pretzels, of course. But, that way, we would periodically coordinate and just say, hey, I'm going back to the car. You want me to bring you a soda? Or we'd both head over, just if nothing else, because my car had seats that we could sit down on, unlike the convention center, and just unload your backpack into that. I mean, I usually bring a couple of different backpacks to Comic-Con, just because usually in the rush to pack the car, I haven't figured out what I'm actually going to use on a daily basis. This year, one of the ones I took worked out exceedingly well for me, so I'm going to kind of earmark that for future years and stuff. But you know, you pick up a couple of books, you pick up enough flyers and stuff, you know, all the other assorted, you know, miscellaneous junk that you get handed, it starts to get a little heavy after a while. Not, oh my god, I can't lift this, but if I'm going to be walking miles, you know, across, you know, a mile across the convention center or whatever, I'd like to be doing it with a fairly lightweight backpack. You know, so periodically, again, like I said, we just go dump it and move on. Again, in past years, and this was again 15, 20 years ago, I was parking under the convention center and my backpack would literally get to where it would weigh, you know, 20, 30, 40 pounds because I'd have, you know, bought too much damn stuff. I'd go toss that into a comic book box in the car and go back up, rinse, repeat. Fortunately, comics were much cheaper then. I was in much better shape back then. Mm-hmm. But it's something where I really think you've got to pace yourself at this convention because it's 8 blocks long. That's not counting the additional block or two on either side for the Hyatt, the Hilton, the Marriott, going into the gas lamp for dinner or whatever. I mean, my sister figured we walked half a mile just every time we went to Gaijin. Again, that's pretty much the exact length, almost give or take half a block to a Rock Bottom Brewery. Mm-hmm. So that right there is a couple of miles worth of walking I did, you know, just over the course of the week, compared to the minimal walking I usually do as the average American.
True. So.
But by and large, it was a fun trip. Got some good stuff. Like I said, bought a book on the Sentai stuff that kind of featured the past 35 years worth of shows and stuff, which is kind of cool. And I could have gotten this off a, you know, an online thing or whatever, but you know, it was nice not having to pay shipping from Japan. Picked up a toy for the current season of the Super Sentai shows that goes with the morpher from the past one. Picked up, I think, Omega Paradox number 4, because I think that may have been canceled through Diamond.
Yeah, I got that too. I'm glad you told me about that, because I had ordered that, and I really like that. I like that series, and I got a good chance to talk to both Ian Ng and Mark Sparacio.
I talked with Mark. Ian wasn't there at the time, and I feel for these guys because it sounds like they're pretty much doing everything right, but through a few mishaps, Diamond's kind of making things a lot harder on them than it should be. But, you know, that's unfortunately the fate of small publishers these days.
Yeah, they are at the whim of... you know, the whim of Diamond, you know.
Yeah, forces outside their control and stuff. But it's, I enjoy talking with publishers and kind of, you know, sometimes hearing their pain, hearing what they went through and stuff. We had reviewed, I guess, the double feature and pointed out a couple of things on the printing stuff. And he's like, yeah, it was fair. Here, let me show you what happened, where this should have been on this page. And, you know, he was, I think, not too happy with how a few things turned out through no fault of their own. And again, I hear a horror story like that at least every year in San Diego. You know, you talk to enough creators, everybody's had something insane go wrong at some point or another. Let's see, talked with them, talked with Aaron Lopresti, who's going to be doing the Amethyst stuff and Sword of Sorcery at DC. Talked with Stan Sakai, because I was curious when we were going to see that next issue of Usagi Yojimbo. And once he's done whatever the Ronin project he's doing with Mike Richardson, he's apparently doing, I think, a 6-issue miniseries set in the future with Usagi, and then he's going to get back to the monthly. So I think we still have a little bit of a wait on there, but I'm looking forward to it. All of what he was telling me he's got planned doing sounds like a lot of fun. And again, that's the cool thing at San Diego, is so much of the industry is there. You can talk with a lot of very, very interesting people. And you can try to talk to others that you just never quite manage to see, because, you know, you're not at their booth when they are, you just don't bump into them in the hall or whatever. One of the people I wanted to talk to again this year was Jan over at Creative Impulse Entertainment with Justice for Hire.
I did talk to him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I
like him.
Yeah, his passion for comics is outstanding. His the work he's doing in the transmedia, both with the print comic, the digital. I think they're doing live action and animated. It's just very exciting stuff, and he's very passionate about that. I I always enjoy talking with him. I just never saw him this year. In past years, it was a little easier because he also used to stay, I don't know if he did this year or not, but used to at the same hotel I was at, so I'd sometimes bump into him in the elevator and stuff. But again, with 128,000 plus people, it's, you know, potluck who you run into, if at all, some years.
Yeah.
So.
Well, again, another San Diego down. I think it's probably the best, you know, the best comic adventure that anyone can take if they get a chance. Even though you'll hear people decrying it for various reasons, I think that, you know, it is what it is. And what it is it's, you know, it's the biggest and best comic show that there is.
Yeah, if you want to see what the comic industry looks like in a single location, this is the best chance to do it. It's just amazing how much of the industry pulls together and then how much of the rest of the other entertainment industries show up and just make for a really fun time.
Yep.
So you survived this this year, I take it, Lenny?
Oh, yeah. It was quite the trip. I actually did not get that much sleep, but I enjoyed it immensely. I did check out San Diego a bit. I actually took a day off from the show. I know Bob thought I was a little crazy for doing that, but I took a day and went to the beach and went up to L.A. and saw a friend of mine and caught a Dodgers game. So it really – and it was wonderful seeing all the friends I'd made and talked to on the Skype calls and on the board and see them in person. That really was the highlight of the show for me, you know, seeing friends and experiencing the con. It was just a wonderful trip.
Yeah, I always enjoy meeting listeners and talking with them face-to-face and stuff. It's, you know, one thing to hear the voice either on a podcast or on the other end of a Skype call or whatever, but it's another to actually see the person and kind of get to know them and stuff. That's one of the great things about, you know, conventions and stuff.
Yeah, I did have one, like, fun, well, it wasn't fun, but one adventure on my way back. I actually lost my camera and my iPod. I know Bob knows the story, and I thought I wouldn't have any of my pictures from the Comic-Con, and through the wonder of honest people at American Airlines,
you left them in the seat pocket when you got off the plane.
That's right. And I raced back and I tried to get it and I couldn't get it. And after a week, I had just about given up. But I called the Chicago Lost and Found on Monday. And lo and behold, you know, an honest person turned it in, an honest person at the Chicago Lost and Found. And I just uploaded all my pictures this evening. It's wonderful.
Excellent. That's good to hear, because that would have been a shame if you'd lost all that.
See him on the thread, right?
That's right. I posted full links, including pictures. I'm just like totally psyched. That was the one sour thing from my vacation and experience, and it's totally reversed itself now. So it was a totally 100% positive experience going out to Comic-Con. I wish I could do it every year. You know.
Are you planning on doing it again at some point?
Definitely at some point. You know, I have to check it out with the other family members. I did this one solo. I think the next one I might be taking my family out with me, and it'll be a little bit of a different experience. But I think within the next 2 or 3 years, I'll definitely be out there again.
Cool. Sounds good. So anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think it's good for me.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what we've discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.